Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of The Factory Must Grow. Joining us on the line today is Twitch Chat again. Hey, Twitch, how are you guys doing today? From all over the world, probably. I know at least some of you are in Europe, some of you are in the Americas, and I'm sure many other countries. That's one of the cool things about the factory genre is we have, I don't know, there's a much larger interest in the genre, I think, around the world, and it's pretty cool. Anyway, today we're going to look at another mod spotlight. We're going to discuss the most recent Friday Factorio facts. We're going to talk about a Satisfactory video that came out, and we're going to get into some listener questions. The mod spotlight today is another one of my favorites. I'm sure we'll get into viewer recommended mod spotlights at some point, but you know, I'm still going with some of my favorites. And this one is additional paste settings fixed. So additional paste settings is originally created 7 years ago. It is an old mod and it was taken over by Bilbo99 about 3 years ago, apparently, when it was abandoned by the original mod maker, and it only has about 12,000 downloads, which in my opinion is criminally underrated because this is one of the best quality of life mods in the game. I mean, I'm not even joking. The amount of time it saves you is absurd because what it does is it allows you to paste your similar recipes into chests, which you might be like, oh, I can already do that. But the problem is right now when you shift right click on an assembler in Factorio, and you shift left click, what it does is it adds an entire stack of what you want. And you can't modify the amounts without going into the chest itself and then modifying the amounts manually. Sometimes it's way too much. You're like, I don't need, you know, 500 of this super expensive item or whatever the stack size is. And so what's really nice is with additional paste settings, what you can do is you can set it to a certain amount of recipes. And so what I do, and there's a bunch of settings, which is great, but what I do is I set it to 5x the recipe amount, or 5x the recipe amount. And what that means is every time I shift left click on a requester chest, it will add exactly 5 recipes worth of inputs to that requester chest. And what's even cooler is you can set it to be cumulative. And so you can keep shift left clicking to add more chunks of 5. And so if I want, for example, 20 recipes worth of requests, you can shift left click 4x, you know, if you have the amount set to 5 and get 20. You can set it to 1 recipe per click or 10 or whatever number you like. I found 5 to be a nice middle ground to be small enough. Every once in a while, I have to change it to 1 or 2 if there's a really expensive, you know, modded recipe or something. But yeah, it's pretty cool. Okay, I'm being corrected. Apparently, it's based on the assembler speed. It tries its best, but it's usually wrong. Okay, yeah. All I know is the vanilla shift pasting into logistics chest was not very good, and it often is not the numbers I want. And additional paste settings fixes that. It also allows you to paste into inserters and even belts and combinators to get similar effects. So with the inserter, it will create a condition to, and you can set whether it's a less than condition or an equal to or a greater than, and you can also set the number. So you can shift right click your assembler and then shift left click an inserter, and it will say, oh, I'll only insert if that recipe result is less than 10, for example. So you can really quickly create these logistic conditions on amounts of items and such. And it's really cool. It even has these little numbers that fly up over the chest that show up. And if all of that wasn't great enough, check this out. If you're building a bot mall, often you will have a requester chest that you want to work for multiple buildings. Maybe you have two buildings that interact with each other and they share a lot of ingredients, but not exactly the same ingredients. So you want to use the same chest. Well, you can just paste both into the chest and they'll merge and add on top of each other. So they won't overwrite each other. So if I've got one thing that requires 10 gears and 10 copper, and I have another thing that requires 10 gears and 10 iron, and I paste them both, I'll end up with 20 gears, 10 copper, and 10 iron. And it's just so cool. It also even has a setting, which I haven't really used yet, but it has an invert setting for buffer chests. So if you paste into a buffer chest, it'll actually put in the output item rather than the input recipe, which is what gets put into requester chests. And so if you want a buffer chest to hold the output, you know, you can paste that into a buffer chest. So anyway, Really sweet mod. Additional paste settings fixed. I highly recommend it for your quality of life needs in Factorio. And you can even change the settings. I know I was mostly talking about the recipe amount setting, but you can change it to a time amount if you want it to paste 20 seconds worth of crafting or 60 seconds worth of crafting into the inserter or the requester chest, etc. And you can also modify it to do stacks if you just want it to request 4 stacks, or you want the inserter to stop at 3 stacks worth or whatever. You can set that properly. And so that could even be helpful for train stops or combinators in particular, if you're using combinators with the additional paste settings. So anyway, highly recommend it. It's a great mod. And that is the mod spotlight for today. So if you have any mod spotlights that or mods that you think should be spotlighted, whether it's in Factorio or another game in the genre, feel free to post those in the Discord and I will take a look at them. Our next topic today is the most recent Factorio Friday Facts. Train Stops 2.0. This is FFF 403. I can't believe they've done 403 Factorio Friday Facts, especially when you factor in that they haven't done one every week since they started. There were quite a few weeks without them for a while, and they just restarted them, you know, when they started teasing things for Factorio 2.0. So I'm pretty excited that we've already passed 400. It's crazy to me. Anyway, Train Stops 2.0 is all about more features they're adding to train stops, not the trains themselves, but the actual, you know, train stops that you put next to the train tracks, because right now they don't have a lot of features, and it really started to bother the playtesters. Clonin, the person who wrote this article, said, "As with most features, these were inspired by annoyances and pain during playtesting." So I just think it's so cool that the dev team for Factorio actually plays their game, and they play their game the way that their players play the game. And that's, I know that sounds so flipping basic. You're like, wait, don't all devs play their game? And I think that's true. I think all devs do play the game, but not all devs play the game the way their players play the game. And I think that is surprisingly rare. And maybe in AAA studios, it happens that way, but then the bosses who have no idea, you know, how players actually play the game override the devs' recommendations. I'm not sure, but it seems like it's just rare these days that devs are adding in things that players actually want, which is so ridiculously basic. I don't know how that's rare, but it is. Anyway, the Factorio devs are great at this, and they're like, they actually play the game, and they're like, this is annoying. I don't want this to work this way, so I'm going to change it. And then they do, and then everybody loves it. There are very few changes I know of that the Factorio devs have made that players have not liked. I mean, as far as I've been following and playing the game, none come to mind. I want to say there were one or two things, especially before the full release, that might have been a little unpopular. But yeah, anyway, devs are great. So back to the actual Train Stops 2.0. One of the first things they mention is that the train stop UI, when the little windows open, when you click on a train stop, right now it'll show trains with this stop, and you can see all the different trains that have that stop on the list. Now it also has a tab for on the way trains, and you can see trains that are on the way to that train stop, which is pretty cool. With that, you can, you know, kind of check if any trains are coming or anything is weird with that. Sorry, I'm getting a window arranged for Twitch chat here. So yeah, the second thing you can do is naming the train stops right now is kind of tedious, because if you have a train limit of, say, 1, and you've got the iron drop-off point, and you have some system that's disabling train stops when the train stops are full, you only want your iron trains to deliver iron when, you know, the train stop increases its train limit. Well, right now, if you were to add a train stop and you were to copy the name iron drop-off, all of your iron trains would want to show up there at the same time, because they're like, ooh, there's a place to go on my schedule, so I'll go there now. But you maybe only have a train system that has room for 1 train at a time, and you're supposed to have a train limit of 1. And so that would be a big problem. Now you've got 50 iron trains coming to this station. There's only room for one, and it just doesn't work. So what they did is they changed it so that when you copy a train stop name, it automatically imports the train limit, and it's the lowest train limit of stops with that name, which is really cool. And if you already set the train limit separately, it won't overwrite that. So it's kind of only a, if you haven't done it yet, it'll just copy in the train limit type thing, which is a really cool system. I've actually made suggestions like this in many games over many Discords that how do I explain this? A lot of times settings should be copied from one thing to the next. And I will often hear people say, but what if you already changed it or you don't want it to be that? And it's like, well, if the player already set property, whatever, to their own value, then don't overwrite it. But if a player hasn't set it, you should copy it over. And I think a lot of games should do that. And even though sometimes it can create a little bit of surprising behavior for players, it often leads to the results that players want. Because if you're copying from one building to another, you usually have the settings the same. And if you really need a different setting, you'll change it. And so it really gets the best of both worlds. If you set the train limit first, it just keeps whatever you set. And if you don't set the train limit, it copies it from the train stop you copy it from. And it really just makes it way easier that way. So that's a pretty good change. It also copies the color, which, you know, is just a nice quality of life thing, I guess. I tend to not color my train stops. Maybe I need to do that. I don't know. I don't even really notice the color of train stops anymore. So maybe that makes me a boring, soulless husk of a person. But I haven't really been someone to color my train stops. Often I don't even color my trains. So maybe I need to get better at that. But I don't know. Anyway, so that's a pretty cool feature. Next feature is if you hover over a train stop in the map view, it actually shows the train stop name, which it doesn't do right now. And right now there's the button in the map view where you can either enable showing all the train stops or enable showing none of them. And you can't kind of have this middle ground where you can see the ones you want to look at, but kind of ignore the rest of them the rest of the time. Anyway, the other thing is that you can copy from the map view. And that's pretty cool too. So you can shift right click and then shift left click on a different train stop from the map view itself on the little circular dot that represents a train stop. That's really cool. I think being able to do things from the zoomed out map view is really nice. Sorry, I guess I didn't explain that. I said from the map view, but I meant from the zoomed out map view, where it's not actually showing you the game rendering, but it's like the map view rendering. Those are kind of two different zoom types in the map view. And it's from the zoomed out map view, you can copy train stop settings and such. And that's really cool. It also, when you hover over the train stop, shows you the trains that are pathing to that station at the moment. And it shows you their pathways. So you can see if a train's on the way, it'll kind of show you that red line on the train tracks. That's really neat. Next thing that they added is bulk renaming train stops. This is going to be really important because of the new train systems that allow you to set train groups and be able to group, 10 trains to do the exact same path. And you're going to add a lot of things to that path. Now we have conditional train stopping, or I forget exactly what they called it, but essentially you can set if else type conditions on whether trains go to stops or not. I think a lot more players are going to have really just one or two or three groups of trains, and then they'll have a group of train stops often for each provided item and each requested item. And now, since you're going to have a lot of train stops that are going to be doing the same thing, it's going to be really annoying to rename them all. Their example in the Friday Facts was, what if you name them all Cooper Droop instead of, Copper Drop? And you're stuck with it. Now you have 500 stations named Cooper, and you need to rename them all to Copper. So now what you can do is you can bulk rename. When you want to apply a name change, you can hold Control, and it will rename all the stops with the same name at the same time. That's really neat. They also mentioned this, which is kind of an aside, but I think it's a big deal. It also works for train groups, which makes sense, and logistics groups. And logistics groups is something we haven't talked about yet on the podcast because it was, what was it, 382, Factorio Friday Facts 382. So it was a couple months ago now. But logistics groups is a really cool feature, and I'm going to tangent for a second on that. What it allows you to do is set a grouping of logistics requests, and I could name it, for example, rail requests. And maybe I want to have chests on various places of Nauvis, the home planet, that have all the things I need to build a rail station and such. And so it wants to request, I don't know, some number of inserters and 100 or 500 rails and a couple rail stations and a few logistics bot, what are they called? Roboports. And it wants to request a bunch of bots and all that. And I want all of that to be requested. I could just name that the rail station group. And then when I build a new chest, I can add the rail station group to it. So it will just automatically request all of those things. And if I change the request in one place, it changes it in all places. So maybe I get a new, I'm trying to think, maybe you were requesting assembler twos in this group, and now you've upgraded your tech and you've got assembler threes. Now you want to request assembler threes in all those places that had assembler twos. You can just change the logistics group and it will change all of the connected systems. It's a really cool system, and you can check and uncheck each of the groups individually for a chest or any place that requests logistics. Even for the player, you know, you can turn on or off your rail requests at any given time. That's the one I'm the most excited about, because right now, if I want to request all the things I need to do rail building, then, you know, I need rails, I need signals, I need train stops, I maybe need locomotives and cargo wagons. If I want to be adding the trains, I need maybe some extra inserters and chests or warehouses or what have you. And maybe I don't want those things in my inventory for most of the gameplay, but when I'm working on rail stuff, I do. Now I can just turn off my logistics bot's requests for all the rail stuff and then get rid of it for the moment. And then I have more inventory space when I'm doing other factory building. So that one I think is going to help on saving inventory space depending on what type of building you're going to be doing. And then you can trash all the things you're not requesting. And so you can really make it so like, yeah, I'll request the train stuff. And then as soon as I uncheck it, it throws all the train stuff into your trash slots and, you know, the bots will come pick it up and take it out of your inventory. And I'm really looking forward to the Butler Butts. Butler Butts? Butler Bots. Butler Bots. Yeah, I want the Butler Bots to pick up all the stuff out of my inventory. Anyway, that's going to be nice. Moving on to the next feature that they actually teased in the Friday facts is Flintstones. Flintstones, what does that have to do with Factorio? Well, right now, there was a little bit of an issue where if your train got stuck over the water, because you can put train tracks over water now with the pylons that they added for elevated rails, then you have nowhere to go. They haven't added the floaties that freight forwarding added, and so you can't just swim. So you can't even get out of the train when it's over the water. So they had to add an ability to manually push the train, which is hilarious. And so they called it the Flintstone style pushing. And, you know, you kind of pedal your feet like the cartoons and slowly move the train to where you can finally get out. I'm hoping that never happens to me because it goes really slow, but it'll work in a pinch. And they show a little GIF on the website of, you know, the character hopping into a cargo wagon, and you can even pedal a cargo wagon somewhere, which is really funny. The next feature was remote driving of trains, which is super handy given that you're going to be on other planets a lot of the time. So if you have a deadlock that you need to fix or some other error that you have, or you need to position a train somewhere that it isn't, you can just manually drive a train, turn it on to manual mode, and use the actual train driving controls. I assume you can also do the control click that you can right now, where it will go to a specific spot in your rail network. So it's kind of semi-automatic driving. I assume you can do that remotely as well, and that's really handy. The next feature is rail planning from map mode. I love that they're adding more features to the zoomed out version of map mode, so you don't always have to zoom in to do things. Now you can do, you know, again, from that zoomed out perspective where they're not actually showing the rendered game, but kind of the map view game, you can kind of, rather than just pasting rail blueprints, which is what you can do right now, you can do the rail planner where it, you know, finds a path to where your mouse is and you can connect things. One thing that's in the GIF that they show on the website is the new half angle rails, which if you haven't been following the Friday facts, you might know, or sorry, you might not know that they added eight more. Yeah, eight more rail directions. Right now, there's only eight directions total. There's, you know, left, right, up, down, and then the four kind of 45 degree angles. They don't look exactly like 45 degrees, which is a weird optical illusion, but they are. And they added all of the in between those directions. So now there's a total of 16 directions, which is really weird. And in the GIF that they show of the person doing the rail planning, it kind of automatically, the rail planner automatically uses those half angles. And I'm not going to lie, it looks really weird. Like my skin crawls a little bit when I see it. And I just kind of want to run away and hide from those new half angle things. And by half angle, they're like 22.5 degree angles. They're very, very small, weird angles. Now, they're not exactly 22.5 to get real technical about it, which is, I guess, what this podcast is for. I think they actually broke it down in the Factorio Friday Facts. I can't remember now, but one of them is slightly less than 22.5 and the other one is slightly greater than 22.5. I think to make all the visuals work or something. I can't remember exactly, but it's close enough that you won't really notice that it's not perfectly in between the diagonal and the vertical or horizontal. Anyway, what I'm hoping is that you can disable the automatic usage of the half angle rails in the rail planner. Because I do think visually it looks worse when you use the half angles mixed with the straight rails, mixed with the, you know, the regular diagonal angles. I think it just doesn't look very clean. It is very nice to be able to use the half angles for intersections or for specific paths along terrain. You know, let's say you're following along a coastline and it's kind of not quite at 45 degrees, but not quite vertical, then it'll be really nice to use the half angle for like a long straight section for that. But what I don't want to use the half angle for is just random corners. I'd rather have a nice, you know, it goes vertical until it gets to the corner and then it goes a 90 degree turn and then it goes horizontal rather than a weird half angle turning into a horizontal type thing, which is what they're showing in the GIF. So I'm hoping you can disable that and it will not automatically use the half angles for you and you can just use the half angles when you choose to. Hopefully that'll be a thing. I'm guessing a mod. Well, I don't actually know if a mod can interact with how the rail planner works or not. I'm not sure if that's possible. So I guess we'll see. Anyway, I do love that there's the half angles. I just hope that we can maybe avoid them if we want to avoid them from the automatic rail builder. And otherwise, we're just going to have to use blueprints, I guess, for all of our rail building. One other thing that's in the GIF, they don't mention this, but it's really cool. It automatically goes over the water. So they're building the rails, and it looks like they're just building rails normally through the map view. And when they mouse over water, it automatically turns into the elevated rail planner, and it shows, you know, the rail requirement that is going to be, you know, blueprinted when they click, and it shows having the ramps up and the pylons and stuff. And then it looks like they click a button to turn that off. So I'm guessing there's going to be a hotkey that will change your rail planner from regular rails to elevated version. That may already be a hotkey. I'm not sure. But it looks like it's a hotkey because it doesn't seem like they're just holding shift or something. Because if they were just holding shift, I guess maybe they're holding it for a long time in the GIF. It's hard to explain to those of you who are just listening, but go watch the GIF on Factorio Friday Facts 403. It's at the bottom of the page and see what you guys think. But anyway, that's not super important. I'm sure it'll be a great quality of life regardless of which way it works. So yeah, that's Factorio Friday Facts 403. And I'm pretty excited about that. It's going to be really cool to have all these new rail features. I do think, as much as I love LTN, I'm going to play with vanilla rails upon the release of Space Age, and I think it's going to be really cool. I'm excited to see how much you can do with vanilla Rails, and it might be enough that I don't need LTN anymore. We'll see. I don't know. Pionodons may always require LTN, but people are telling me it's just force build to build the trains over the water. So it may not have anything to do with pressing a hotkey or not. It may just be force build and super force build, which is another thing they teased, where you can build landfill and the thing on top of the landfill at the same time in terms of blueprints, which is really cool. Anyway, moving on, that's the Factorio Friday facts. The next thing I want to talk about is the Satisfactory video that came out, was it yesterday? I think it was just yesterday. And what is today? Today is March 24th. So I think it came out on March 23rd, maybe the 22nd. And they released a video titled, what was it titled? I don't know the title, but it's essentially what isn't coming in Satisfactory 1.0. If you don't know what Satisfactory is, then, well, you should. But if you don't, it's an awesome game. It's a 3D, the simplest way to put it is 3D Factorio. I don't think that really does it justice. It is a very different game than Factorio. There are some core design philosophies, I think, that differ between the Satisfactory team and the Factorio team. I don't think either one is worse or better. Some people like to... This is just a gaming community thing that really bothers me. Why does everyone have to gatekeep and argue over what's better? Xbox versus PlayStation or this or that and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Console wars, as they call it. PC Master Race, that kind of thing. I mean, they're both great games. They can both be great games that do things differently. And the things that they do differently are going to mean that some people like one over the other. And there's nothing wrong with either of those. Let people like what they like. Because direct comparison is hard. When one of them has three-dimensional movement, it's fundamentally a different game. Satisfactory, you can build a factory on top of another factory, and you're the one walking in first-person mode between one section of factory to the next. It feels so different than Factorio, where even though you are an engineer walking, it feels a bit more like that RTS style where you're kind of just moving the camera. In a lot of Factorio, it often feels like the engineer is mostly just what the camera follows. Whereas in Satisfactory, the movement itself is a big part of the game and you unlock new things, you know, that allow you to move more easily, like jetpacks eventually or floaty jetpacks or zip lines or all sorts of cool stuff. And anyway, all that to say, Satisfactory is in many ways a 3D Factorio. One big difference is the handcrafted world rather than procedurally generated, which I love. And it makes exploring way more satisfying. In Factorio, exploring is kind of mid at best because you're just going to find more ore and more biters and more forests and more cliffs and more water, right? There's not anything out there to go find. And in Satisfactory, that's not really the case. There are little secrets to find. They have these things called power slugs. Are they called power slugs? They're some sort of slugs. They're glowing slugs that you process to make power shards, which make your things go faster. So there's reasons to explore in Satisfactory. And it feels really cool to explore because you're exploring something that a human made. And there's some character behind it. It's not just procedurally generated, whatever. I love that. Anyway, all that to say, the 1.0 release of Satisfactory is coming out later this year, which is really exciting. We have what I would argue are the two best factory games in the genre, which is Satisfactory and Factorio, both coming out with massive releases, probably pretty close to each other. So I'm loving this. I'm also scared that they're going to come out too close to each other, and I'm going to have to pick which one I want to play. And I'm really hoping that's not the case, because obviously, I mean, if you know me, you know Factorio is near and dear to my heart. So I will be doing Factorio the moment that it comes out, regardless of when that is. But Satisfactory is very exciting to me as well. And anyway, on to the video that Coffee Stain released. It's kind of sad to have a video titled What Isn't Showing Up, you know, in 1.0. But one thing they mention is the big crab enemy boss thing that they have in the original teaser. They mentioned that's not coming. Honestly, that's not a big deal. They just kind of talk about we've realized that combat isn't the biggest deal in this game. It's fun, it's cool, but it's not the game. It's not the game that people come here for. And so the big crab isn't the most important thing for us to finish before 1.0. It is cool. I hope they get to it eventually, and I hope they do flesh out combat a little bit. One of the things Snut, who's the community manager right now, one of the things he mentions in the video is that they kind of feel like if they were going to add that, they would basically want to do a revamp of combat in general to make the whole system more interesting. So it kind of seems like they might have a rework of the combat system somewhere down the line. But he didn't say too much about it, so I'm not really sure. The next thing he talked about was official mod support. This one's weird because they've always loved the modding community, and they've always talked about official mod support for Satisfactory. And to be honest, and I don't know if I love this or not, he basically said the community has already done such a good job with modding. He didn't say it exactly this way, but reading between the lines, for me, it felt like he was saying, the community has already done such a good job, we don't really feel like we need to do this yet. Like, because there's already such great mod support from the community, we don't really need to add it to the game because we have other fish to fry. That's what it felt like he was saying, kind of, if you read between the lines. You can watch the video and tell me. I'll put a link in the description to the video, by the way, but you can watch it yourself and tell me if you think that's not really what he was getting at. But it felt to me that's kind of what he was saying. And the whole video, he said many times, essentially, we have to focus on the most important things, right? We have to focus on getting the core experience of the game to be perfect for 1.0. And that's the most important thing for them to work on. And from a baseline perspective, that's kind of obvious, right? If you're on a time crunch to the finish line, you got to do the most important stuff. You don't have time for everything. So official mod support is one that they've kind of decided, you know what? Things are already pretty good for the modding community. And so we're going to put that on the list of things we don't quite need to do yet. I am a little bummed by that. Not how to say this. I think I'm only bummed because it means less players will mod the game. Official mod support is really important for a lot of players to mod games, even if the modding solution that the community has come up with is perfect. It's still unofficial. And having a game that has a button on the main menu called mods, and you click on it, and you can go find and download mods from that menu, makes every player in the game interested from a default perspective in the modding community. Even if they don't want to play with mods, they'll probably still click on it at some point and see what's there, right? Whereas if you don't have that, for a player to mod the game, they have to, first of all, know that the modding community even exists, which may not be there. And they have to then go to some website, which they might not know if it's sketchy or not. And there's just so many steps. So I would almost prefer, if they're not going to do official mod support, I would prefer if they did unofficial support, or sorry, let me rephrase that. I would prefer them to officially support the unofficial modding community. As in, there is a button in the game on the main menu that takes you to this community website. I think that would be a better way to fulfill their promise. Because they did promise. I mean, maybe promise is the wrong word, but they did say they were going to put mod support in the full release of the game. They have said that multiple times. Snut even mentions in the video, if you had asked them 3 or 4 months ago if mod support would be in the final game, they would have said, oh, of course. So this is a recent decision that they made to cut that from the 1.0 release. And I kind of hope that they, I don't know, do something to make up for it by somehow officially plugging the modding community. I think modding of Satisfactory is going to be really big, just like it is for Factorio and many other games in the genre. So I hope that there's either very fast mod support for the game or kind of some officially mentioned support for the unofficial modding community. So we'll see about that. The next thing he mentions is circular foundations not being in the game. This is very much a aesthetic thing. I'm fine with that. I think it would be cool to have circular foundations, but that's obviously not a super high priority. He also mentions again, there's ways to do it already, so it's just not the biggest deal for them. I think some players will be disappointed by that because the ways that you have to do it currently are a little bit hacky and janky, but, you know, again, they're doing the more important stuff, like whether or not you can perfectly build a circular foundation is not what makes or breaks the satisfactory experience. I think we can all agree on that. Although there might be a couple players that disagree, but most will agree that that's not the thing that matters the most. Another thing they cut is roads. I don't really remember too much about them talking about roads. It was going to be some sort of spline system where you could, you know, click one place and click another place and it would build like a smooth curve, you know, even three-dimensionally, like up and around kind of road that you could drive your trucks and tractors on and stuff. But I think they just realized this system is going to need a lot more work to get it where they want to be. And so they just can't add it yet. I'm fine with that. I do think it'll be really nice to have roads because, well, I guess they fixed the truck system. The trucks used to be super janky and they would get stuck and other bad things could happen. Now they kind of have it semi on rails. So if something goes wrong, it'll just fix itself magically, which is not the most perfect solution, but it means that your factory is going to run properly if you have trucks supplying some of your resources. Whereas before, things could actually break. I'm glad that they changed that. So that, to me, that means roads feel a little bit less necessary because before, roads would have been a solution to trucks being janky because you could have built a road and then they're never going to get stuck. Now, roads are just going to be more of a aesthetic, cool thing that you can build to make things feel good and look good. And I'm sure that they will add that down the road and it'll be great. He mentions logic systems. This one was interesting. I wasn't even entirely certain what he meant. I don't know if he meant more some form of circuits, like Factorio circuits, or if he meant something more like logistics system, like requesting and providing, like Factorio has, you know, logistics bots. I'm not really sure if he meant one or the other or both. Because right now, as far as I'm aware, the only things Satisfactory really has is the smart splitter. And the smart splitter allows you to prioritize 1 to 3 outputs. And it allows you to filter the 1 to 3 outputs that it has, which is super nice. But I don't think we're going to be getting any more than that for the 1.0 release. People in the Discord are saying they think it means the like conditional automation or circuit network type stuff, like, oh, only run this constructor if we need iron plates, that sort of thing. Yeah, I think that's probably what was meant by logic systems. And again, he explained, honestly, is this even worth it? Because we don't want to design... I thought this was a really good point that he made, by the way. He said, we don't want to design the game in such a way where these logic systems are necessary, because then that makes kind of the barrier to entry to the game a bit higher, right? If you have to deal with logic systems, the game's already complicated enough, let's be honest. Most of you who are listening to this podcast are probably power users already. If you're interested enough to listen to a podcast about this genre, you probably are a power user and you're above the bell curve of the average Satisfactory player in terms of how much you understand and know about automation and circuit conditions and stuff like that. So a lot of players would find a required logic system to be a bit too much. And I like that he made this point. So essentially he was saying, we want it to be optional, not necessary. And if it's optional anyway, then is it the most important thing to add for the 1.0 release? And I think that's just a really simple way to put it. It'll be great when and if we can add it, but it's not necessary for the 1.0 release. He mentioned a couple other minor things like removing beacons entirely, which they had already talked about. The beacon feature is essentially now just a part of the map view already. You can just add pinpoints or pins to the map. They're removing color cartridges and flowers, which were resources you needed to paint your factory. I think that's a good idea. Cosmetic stuff should always be a really low barrier to entry, I think, in games. If you want to do a ton of cosmetic stuff, it's just annoying to have to do all of it. And if you don't care about cosmetic stuff, it's just random stuff that you don't care about. So I've never really felt like games where cosmetics are part of what you have to unlock or produce. I've never felt like that's a great idea. I think cosmetics should usually be free, quote unquote, or at least free once you've gotten to a certain place in the tech tree or whatever. I don't know. That's just an opinion, though. I'm sure people disagree with me and say, oh, no, it's a fun challenge. I loved having to collect flowers to make my color cartridges. I personally don't think it's great. So anyway, one other thing was the recipe rebalances. He mentioned they're doing a full pass of the entire tech tree of recipes and kind of making sure all of the recipes that are in the game are balanced well against each other. He said it'll mostly affect the later parts of the tech tree, but he didn't outright say nothing in the early game will change. It sounded like very little would change in the early game if anything changes, but they just want to make sure that nothing's like way too overpowered or way too underpowered. I'm guessing they're going to look through all the alternative recipes. That's where the biggest balancing challenges come in, and we'll probably see quite a few changes. He said, we didn't want to do this a bunch of times throughout the early access updates, and we didn't want to iterate over and over and over again because every change breaks somebody's factory. So I think their goal is to break everybody's factory at the same time, just once on the 1.0 release. So that's going to be cool. And I assume it'll just make the final result a bit better of a balanced game. And that was pretty much it. Those were the only things they said weren't coming in 1.0 that they had previously, I think, mentioned would be coming. And I think overall, that's a pretty good list. None of those things feel massively important. I think official mod support is the biggest one that makes me sad and probably feels like the biggest feature. The other ones were minor features of the game. Official mod support feels a bit like a major feature of the game. That's not quite making it. I'm hoping that they rush that pretty quick after 1.0, so it doesn't feel like, you know, just a complete dropped promise type thing where we're still 6 months out after release and there's still no official mod support. I'm hoping it's not quite like that, but we'll see. And there was one other thing in the video. And if you don't want any spoilers at all, then skip ahead about a minute. But one thing they teased was a short little 10-second video at the end of the YouTube video. And it was showing a constructor making biomass pellets, or I forget exactly what they're called, biofuel maybe, but the kind of like barrel looking shape, the cylinders of biomass, and it showed them being fed on a conveyor into a biomass burner. That's right, there's a conveyor input for the biomass burners now, and I'm not sure if it's going to be a separate or entity that has the conveyor input or probably just the same one, but now you can semi-automate. As long as you're feeding the constructors with the wood and stuff, you can semi-automate power. So that's pretty cool. You don't have to manually feed the biomass burners anymore. I think some people are going to not like that change. I personally like the change. It was an annoyance of the early game that I don't think quite paid off. The juice wasn't quite worth the squeeze, so to speak. I just think it was more annoying than it was fun. Some people are going to be on the other side of that coin, and that's fine. But anyway, that was the Satisfactory video that came out this week. Pretty cool news. So excited for 1.0. I think one of the reasons I'm so excited is that I haven't played the game in forever. I mean, the last time I played the game was I actually streamed it, and it was probably a couple years ago now. It was for I don't remember if it was the nuclear update or the drone update, or maybe that was the same update. But it was whenever they added nuclear power was the last time I really played through the game. And I've really been itching to play it again. And I haven't quite felt like it's time. And then they they released the news that 1.0 is going to come out. So I said to myself, well, now I just have to wait for 1.0. And here we are. So I'm really itching to play, but I'm waiting for 1.0. So the anticipation is continuing to build. So what's next? We are going to talk through some viewer questions, and then I think we'll wrap up the podcast. Man, episode 2 going so fast, having fun. Dave Kvist asks, which key features need to be in every good automation game? For example, good transparency of important numbers like recipe costs, crafting times, speeds, etc. A good example of this is how when you have a building in Satisfactory, it tells you how many per second it's producing. So when you have your iron plate factory, it's per minute. Everything's measured per minute in Satisfactory, but it'll say 30 iron plates per minute. And if you put a power shard into the building and speed up the building, it'll change that number. It'll do the math for you. It'll tell you, ooh, now I'm outputting 45 iron plates a minute or whatever. One thing that's interesting is that Factorio doesn't tell you this. All Factorio does is it tells you the crafting time for the recipe, which might be, let's say, 5 seconds. It tells you the crafting speed of the building in a separate place. You have to mouse over the building to see the building's crafting speed, and you have to actually mouse over the recipe somewhere to see the recipe speed. And then there's also how many items are output in the recipe. So let's say you're making 2 iron gears in a 5-second recipe in a building that has a speed of 3. How the heck many iron gears per second are you making? And it's actually not trivial to do that. I mean, obviously, it's just a math formula with 3 numbers, but that's 3 numbers you have to math in your head, which not everyone is great at. I know I make lots of mistakes with that, and not everyone has a calculator sitting on their desk. So it is interesting that Factorio hasn't included any sort of rate calculations in their base game. I'm wondering if they're going to add something like that into Space Age, because there's so many more products and the production lines are going to get longer in Factorio. I'm wondering if they're going to add showing the per second kind of output or input or both of buildings. As far as, you know, what key features need to be in a good automation game, that's such a deep question. We could have an entire podcast about that. But I think my short answer is the progression from one kind of tier of technology to the next needs to feel rewarding. If I'm going to make copper plates and then turn those into copper wire or whatever, you know, I'm just saying for any game here, and then I have to add rubber to that to make cables, can I do anything cool with those cables? If I'm just making items to make more items to make more items, that can feel really empty. And you need to give the player some progression that feels like they're getting somewhere. Often that's in the form of giving the player upgrades, whether it's they can move faster or build further, or they have some sort of new feature in the game that they've unlocked, like fluid management and pipes. You know, like Satisfactory starts you off with no fluids, and then they ease you into it. Same thing with Factorio. You don't really have to deal with fluids except for water. And even that's super simple at first. And then you get oil unlocked, and the whole world becomes different because now you have pipes to build. And that feels like a cool thing to unlock. A lot of players mention that that's actually where they get stuck in the game because the challenge is so big. So I think it's interesting that good automation games have these senses of you make things to make more things, but then you usually have some form of research that you need to do with that. And then you unlock more things to do, and you have these back and forths with technology, but at some point you need to get into a new phase of the game. And for Factorio, fluids is a good example of that. Needing to use trains or large amounts of belts is a good example of that. You know, Satisfactory giving you something like nuclear which has some byproducts is a good example of that. There's a lot of other examples in other games, but just having byproducts is one thing. Having, you know, new, like in Space Age mod for Factorio, going to space is a great example of that. Like, that's the thing you're sort of progressing towards, and once you start doing that, it almost feels like the game's different, but it's still the same, and it gives you reasons to do things. I think that's one of the most important things. I'm sure there's more. Like I said, we could spend a whole podcast talking about this. So I'll move on to the next question for now. Salsa, a bit of a less serious question. What is your favorite pizza topping / go-to mixed drink? Well, that's 2 questions for the price of 1, I guess. Favorite pizza topping is difficult. I tend to be a meat lovers kind of guy, but it does depend on the style of pizza. One of my friends in real life has a Detroit style deep dish recipe for barbecue chicken pizza. And I was always a barbecue chicken hater. I was not a fan. I was like, well, who would ever want barbecue sauce and chicken on a pizza? That just sounds wrong. However, his barbecue chicken deep dish Detroit style pizza made me want to never eat anything else again. It was so good. So in that particular case, that's my favorite topping. I wouldn't say I would get that flavor combo anywhere, though. Like, I wouldn't get a barbecue chicken from, you know, Pizza Hut or whatever. But his recipe, his homemade recipe, that I'd say that's my favorite pizza. And if I'm just getting any random old pizza, Meat Lovers is probably my go-to. Or just, you know, pepperoni, sausage, whatever. Go-to mixed drink, that's an interesting one. I think my favorite in the summertime, when it's warm, is called a Vomat. And it is a mixture of lemon juice, simple syrup, St. Germain's, which is an elderflower liqueur, and gin. And it is delicious. Highly recommend. On a similar note to that question, Nagon asks, what brews are best for building the factory? And I'm going to be honest here. I don't love to drink before or during Factorio. I think it makes me a little bit more lethargic, and it makes my brain not want to do the hard things, and Factorio feels too hard. And so usually if I'm having a beer or whatever, that's more when I want to watch a show or something or play a really chill and relaxing game. So I tend to find the brews that are best for building the factory are the non-alcoholic ones, like a, you know, sparkling water or whatever, or just good old-fashioned water. But that, you know, your mileage may vary. Some people may find they factory best after a couple suds. So, you know, that's up to everybody. Let's see. I think we have time for one more question. Glim says, what is a good mix of static upgrades? For example, upgrading belts from 15 per second to 30 per second versus incorporating new concepts as tech progresses. Are there generalities to be drawn, or is it purely subjective tastes? So what he's getting at here is a little bit of what we were just talking about with unlocking oil production in Factorio, where you've gotten further in the game and you're not just getting faster factories and you're not just getting faster belts or faster bots or faster movement speed. You're actually getting a whole new mechanic, fluids. And that completely changes how you need to approach the game. Now you need to have cargo wagons or fluid wagons on your train tracks, and you need to have pipes going everywhere, and you have to deal with pipe spaghetti. If you're not using the squeak through mod, you have to build your pipes in a way that they don't get in the way of you walking. You have to consider, how can I still move around my factory with all these pipes in the way? There's a lot of things that you have to deal with, and it's not just some sort of upgrade that is kind of a no-brainer. Right, once you get red belts in Factorio, which are the 30 per second belts, you really just switch to them. Assuming you have enough iron to produce them, there's no benefit to build a yellow belt, except in really weird cases where you want to limit throughput, but that's pretty rare. So I would say that a good factory game, and I think this does dovetail into the previous question that Dave had asked, is you want to have a back and forth. If you have too many new mechanics being thrown onto the player constantly, it feels overwhelming. And they feel like, oh God, I don't even know what to do next because there's 50 different things I could do and they all feel like different mechanics. But if you never have a new mechanic, if you just had more and more things to automate and you never really unlocked anything different, the game would get really boring really fast. Right. And so there's this back and forth, and some of them are more minor. For example, unlocking a chemical production plant, but maybe it still uses solid ingredients. Well, it's a new building, but it still uses belts and inserters, you know, to go back and forth. And so there's this combination of, like, how much are you adding to the, almost like the player needs to learn how to do something new, and how much are you adding to, okay, now the player can do something old but better. And then how much are you doing neither? Some technologies just unlock new recipes, and they don't give you any benefit other than now you can make new things in the factories you already have. And I think, honestly, all of those in some combination is the best. As far as what exact ratio of each is best, I do think that's a bit subjective. And you can see that in the different mods that Factorio has. For example, Pyanodons has lots of all of those. I mean, the ratio, I don't even know exactly what the ratio is, but it has a million new recipes that just add new things to buildings you already have. It has a million new buildings and new processes. And then it also has quite a few new mechanics that it introduces as you play further that you need to deal with. And I think all of those combined, it's massive in terms of how much the player has to keep track of, which is really cool. And then you look at Vanilla Factorio, and really fluids and potentially the rail network, but the rail network's not even required. And so fluids, oh, and logistics bots. Sorry, I forgot about bots. Fluids and bots are the main two that Factorio adds, with Rails being a third place because it's optional. I would say bots are also optional, but far more players. I think bots are way easier because they help you, whereas trains sometimes feel like they hinder you. And so I think way more players when they're starting out feel like, okay, I got fluids, I have to deal with it. Oh, thank goodness I got logistics bots. Now they can carry things around for me and I get to do that. And those are also two very different types of progress. I have to deal with that, or I get to do that, right? One of them is like, ooh, I get logistics bots. How fun. Now my butler bots, I can say that properly now. Now my butler bots carry that around properly for me, and they get to move things around, and I don't have to. Whereas, you know, when you unlock the fluid stuff, you're like, okay, I have to deal with heavy oil and light oil and petroleum. And for some players, that's a downside. For some players, it's fun. For some players, it's a little bit of a, I have to deal with it, but then it's rewarding once they do. And that's the cool design space in all of these factory games, is you can turn your game into some, you know, back and forth of, okay, I'm going to make them face a challenge, but it's not going to be so hard that they can't handle it. And then once they handle it, it'll feel good because they're rewarded with something that, you know, they get to do. And I think that's a good pace. Is you want to put something like logistics bots, which are very rewarding, behind a challenge like oil, because it's very challenging, especially if you've never done it before. And I think that's a really good way to balance things so that players are motivated to push through some of those difficult moments because of what the light they see on the other side. And in general, in game design, that's what you want to do, right? If you're gonna challenge the player, you need to reward the player. A challenge with no reward is not really that great. Yes, you can argue every challenge is its own reward, but I mean, at that point, like, okay, why aren't you just running 10 miles? That's a reward too, right? Like, there are reasons we don't do hard things. It's because they're hard. And so if you're putting hard things in your game, you want to add some bonuses that the player receives to make them feel good for completing that. Yeah, Aylor mentions it in the Discord. Beacons is another good example of this, that, you know, it's hard to get to beacons, but once you have, there's this massive reward of being able to make all your buildings go faster, and you can put productivity modules in them, and then they go faster and produce more, and it feels really good to get to beacons. By the way, we're going to have to talk about beacons in a future episode, because I find that topic very interesting, and it's a hot topic in the Factorio Reddit and Discord these days on whether the vanilla Factorio beacon design is better, which is where you can surround a building with beacons, or the space exploration, which is the mod, version of beacons is better, which is where you can only have one beacon affecting buildings at a certain time, and they have a large area of effect. Which one's better, and why? And I think that's a really interesting topic. We're going to have to get into that in a future episode. But for now, I think we will wrap up episode 2 of The Factory Must Grow. I do want to give a shout out to all my patrons. I don't yet have a separate Patreon for the podcast versus the YouTube and Twitch channel, but if you would like to support the podcast financially in any way, the best way to do that for now is going to patreon.com/Crydax. You do get some perks like a special name color in the Discord and some shout outs from time to time on the channel, but you know, it's mostly just a voluntary thing. There's no super, you know, content locked behind Patreon or anything, because I don't want to put any paywalls on any of my content as of now, and there are none. If you have any questions, ideas for topics, or ideas for guests we could have on the channel, please head over to the Discord and recommend that there. There's a link in the show notes below, and let me know about that. And yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. We will see you next week, and always remember, the factory must grow.